welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's Game with Words, where we actually let the audience choose our questions.
I have two left. One is completely horrible, and the other is just positively despicable. Completely horrible or despicable? Despicable. Okay, despicable it is.
And how would our own panelists describe the fun we've had together all these years?
You should see my notes, my handwriting. I have the golden age of baloney.
And this week will be no different. We intend to push the verbal envelope. Maybe pull a few fast ones.
Do you know what W.C. Fields said of Mae West?
No, what?
It's a plumber's dream of Cleopatra.
That's it. That's really true. Kids, your parents will explain that on the way home. Yeah. Thanks for that.
It's too late to do anything about it now, but Says You is up next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Reports from Syria say government troops have launched an offensive to recapture the rebel-held town of Al-Qusair after weeks of fighting in the surrounding area. The BBC's Jim Muir reports from Beirut.
Video posted on the internet by activists, which we can't independently verify, gave some idea of the intensity of the bombardment inflicted on Al-Qusair as government forces prepared for what appeared to be a push aimed at recapturing the town. State television said troops had surrounded rebel fighters in Al-Qusair and were storming them from several directions, knocking out rebel command posts on the southern side. Al-Qusair and nearby villages have been hotly contested for weeks. It's a vitally important strategic area. For the government, it commands routes between the capital and the coast, while if the rebels control it, they can come and go freely from nearby Lebanon.
The BBC's Jim Muir in Beirut. New York City's police commissioner is calling the fatal shooting of a man just blocks from the birthplace of the gay rights movement early Saturday morning an anti-gay hate crime. Mark Garber from member station WNYC reports.
Commissioner Raymond Kelly says the gunman used homophobic slurs before firing a lethal shot point blank into another man's face on a Greenwich Village street, bustling with a weekend midnight crowd not far from the iconic Stonewall Inn. Kelly added that witnesses saw the suspect, 33-year-old Elliot Morales, and another man, approach the victim and a companion from behind while repeating anti-gay slurs. He says Morales then fired one shot into the cheek of the victim, 32-year-old Mark Carson, who was pronounced dead at a hospital. The violence follows a series of recent public bias attacks on gay men in New York, none of them deadly. For NPR News, I'm Mark Garber in New York.
Authorities say a home invasion at an off-campus home resulted in the death of a New York college student. Nassau County Homicide Lieutenant John Izada says one of the shots fired at the suspect by police hit and killed a female Hofstra University student Saturday night.
The officer eventually fired 8 rounds in total. 7 of those rounds struck our subject. 1 of those rounds struck the victim.
Police say the intruder had an extensive criminal history and was wanted on a parole violation related to a first-degree robbery conviction. Law enforcement officials in Spokane, Washington, are continuing the search for another person suspected of sending letters containing the deadly poison ricin. The letters were postmarked Tuesday and addressed to a downtown post office in a nearby federal building. They aren't saying whether the letters were addressed to anyone in particular. Investigators searched a downtown apartment yesterday. There's no word of an arrest or of anyone being questioned. This is NPR News. South Korea's defense ministry is confirming North Korea fired 3 short-range guided missiles into its eastern waters on Saturday. It's not clear what the intent was, but experts believe North Korea is trying to improve the range and accuracy of its arsenal. The missiles launched Saturday only have a range of about 75 miles compared to the 1,800-mile range of North Korea's medium-range missiles. The military in Nigeria has imposed a 24-hour curfew in parts of a key city in the northeast known to be an Islamist stronghold. NPR's Ofabia Quistarkton reports.
There's a blackout in significant areas of Maiduguri as part of a crackdown by the security forces against Islamist fighters in northeastern Nigeria. The city was home to the original uprising in 2008, led by the Boko Haram sect. Nigeria's president stands accused of failing to curb the violence in the predominantly Muslim north, where an Islamist campaign has targeted government and security installations, as well as churches and mosques. West Africa and the White House are concerned that Al-Qaeda-linked jihadi groups may seize control of strategic territory in Nigeria, as they did in nearby Mali, before being driven out by French-led forces there. Ofebi Akwistarkton, NPR News, Harare.
Rescue crews in Indonesia are continuing the search for 23 workers trapped at a U.S.-owned gold and copper mine. The training facility collapsed Tuesday. 10 miners were rescued and 5 bodies have been recovered so far. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, proud sponsor of StoryCorps, celebrating the power of listening.
MountainLodge.com. Spell out mountain, put an E on stove.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Great.
Thank you. From the Vermont shores of the Connecticut River, welcome to Bellows Falls, Vermont, and Says You. A simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. Television host, documentarian, the prince of pronouns, Barry Nolan. Cultural maven, artistic supporter, adverb, advocate, Francine Akbar. And he's waiting for it. Radio icon, voice for the ages, the old gray dangling participle himself, Mr. Tony Khan. Once a year we do that. Who's captain this week?
Still the big dangle.
Still dangling. Still dangling.
To my left, team two, producer, performer, rap-auteur, Arnie Reisman. Columnist, critic, wordsmith, Carolyn Faye Fox. And executive coach, consumer journalist, the official, Says You Laugh Track, Miss Paula Lyons.
Glad I'm good for something.
And who's the captain this week?
Miss Fox.
Yes.
Carolyn will captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of odd man out. Which of the following does not belong in the list? 5 points for the correct answer, 5 more for telling me why. Carolyn, Bob Feller.
Oh, God. Bob Feller.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Eddie Felson.
F-E-L-S-O-N. Yeah.
Bill Lee.
Yeah.
All right. And Fletcher Wiley.
Wiley has played on this show.
He certainly has.
So he's the odd man out.
Well, we're not going to go.
Oh, so it's not the answer you want. Well, does this have a Vermont-related
answer? It does not.
Well, can I take a stab here?
Absolutely.
Is Bill Lee the odd man out?
Bill Lee is, in fact, the odd man out.
Because it's Bill's Spaceman Lee.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's Fast Eddie Felson of Billiards fame. Right?
Yes.
It's Flash Wiley. And Bob Feller, Mr. Fastball himself. It's another little...
He's actually Rapid Robert Rapid, Feller,
Rapid
but
Robert
10
Feller.
Points.
Right.
Very good job.
Ah,
wow.
Nice.
That's Rapid Robert, Fast Eddie, Flash Wiley, and of course Bill Lee, who
Spaceman
Bill Lee.
Whatever part of your brain you use, Darnie, I hope you're leaving it to science.
It's already been left. I don't know what I'm using.
Try this one, Tony.
Seltzer.
Singers. Hairdos.
Hairdos.
Tires. And golf balls. Seltzer, singers, hairdos, tires, and golf balls. You give them a minute with this. This is what
tires, inflatable.
Bridge.
That girl I remember had an inflatable hairdo. It was one of those
things
from the
50s. Is this a word that goes with four of these words?
No.
No.
Well, sort of, but not really.
No. Okay. That's true. Bubbles?
Well, it certainly has something to do with bubbles.
Seltzer has bubbles. Singers used to sing about tiny bubbles. You can have a bubble hairdo.
Right. Michelin tire man, certainly.
I'm going to put an end to this one pretty soon.
Please, the agony is terrible.
But I got to tell you that bubbles does fit into this. It does play into this.
Bubbles fits in.
Oh, wait a second. Flat. Seltzer gets flat. Singers can be flat. Tires can go flat. And hairdos, well,
can go flat.
Golf balls don't go flat.
That's exactly right. 10 points. Nice job.
Good, Tony.
Nice job, Tony.
I'd like to thank the entire town for giving me the time to come up with the answer to that.
All right. Arnie, here's the tribute to Arnie. This is his favorite category. I kill him every time. If you get this, without the hint, I won't believe it. Okay. Try this one. What's the odd one out? The economic effect of the Teapot Dome scandal. Man's crisis of identity in the latter half of the 20th century. The golden age.
Wait a minute, these take longer to write down.
The golden age of ballooning. And how to recognize different kinds of trees from quite a way away. Let me repeat that.
Oh, why bother?
The economic effect of the Teapot Dome scandal. Man's crisis of identity in the latter half of the 20th century. The golden age of ballooning. And how to recognize different kinds of trees from quite a way away.
All right, they were all hit songs.
Yeah, that economic effect of the Teapot Dome knocked me out.
Catchy. Do you know the economic effect of the Teapot Dome scandal?
Yeah, it's called the Great Depression.
Thank you. All right.
It's one of them. It's
man's crisis in the second half of the 20th century. Depression.
And the depression of balloons?
Yes.
And depression of seeing trees from far away?
No, that's
well, when you
okay.
let the air out of the balloons, they do get depressed.
Yes, they
well,
get depressed.
Well, they do.
I'm getting depressed sitting here.
Recognizing trees would be the odd one out.
That's actually kind of a
how to recognize trees
how to recognize different kinds of trees from quite a way away.
So we're talking about binoculars?
Is that Monty Python?
It is.
Oh!
All right. One of them is not a Monty Python sketch.
That's exactly right. Which one?
Oh, from far away. Very good.
Whoa.
Now, why would they be doing Teapot Dome?
They wouldn't.
Yes.
10 points. Excellent job.
Okay.
Man's identity, a crisis of identity in the latter half of the 20th century, the golden age of ballooning, and how to recognize different kinds of trees are all Monty Python shows.
There we go.
The economic effect of the Teapot Dome scandal was my senior thesis in high school. So there you go.
And do you remember the name of the guy who took the fall?
Yeah, Doheny.
Albert Fall.
Yeah.
Was the fall guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Doheny was the...
And Edward right. Doheny, yeah. Okay.
Don't mind us. We'll be back in a minute.
You should see my notes, my handwriting. I have the golden age of baloney.
That was just excellent. Carolyn, nice
Very
job.
Good.
Try this one, Francine. What's the odd one out? Wrinkle. Crease. World. and normal. Wrinkle, crease, world, and normal.
And that's world as in globe as opposed to a spinning verb. All right.
Crease.
Crease is the odd one out. Do you know why?
A new wrinkle, a new world, the new normal.
But there is no new crease that we
that's
could think
right.
of.
Not that we're aware.
10 points. Nice job.
Very good.
I had help from my partner.
All right, Paula, try this one. What's the odd one out? Fabian.
Oh. Ooh, Fabian.
Yeah.
Yes, my time.
Sylvester.
Sylvester. Oh.
Eugene. E-U-G-E-N-E.
Mm-hmm.
Rural, R-U-R-A-L. And urban, U-R-B-A-N. Fabian, Sylvester, Eugene, rural, and urban.
They're all popes.
Yes.
They are, you know.
They
it's
are.
Pope
they're
urban
all popes
and
except for
Pope.
Pope. No, there's no
Pope
Sylvester.
Other.
Yeah, right.
There was a Pope Sylvester.
You're exactly
okay.
right.
There was
what?
A Pope Sylvester.
Pope Sylvester.
So the odd man out is rural?
The odd man out is rural because?
The only ones are popes.
That's exactly right. 10 points. Wow.
Hey, Eugene, do you remember me?
Oh. Guys are just eating this one up. And finally, Barry, Clarence DeMar. Larry Holmes, Patty Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, and Carlton Fisk.
Oh.
You know this?
Mm-hmm.
You're kidding.
Clarence, it has something to do with in-out fair foul?
No, it does not.
No?
Clarence DeMar,
and not
Larry Holmes, Patty Sheehan, and Carlton Fisk.
Things they caught.
Or failed to catch.
No.
Fighters?
No.
Larry Holmes was the boxer that fought Muhammad Ali.
Yes, he did.
Carlton Fisk was the beloved catcher.
He certainly was.
For the Red Sox that famously is in that thing going, get fair, get fair, get fair.
That's right.
Right. Have anything to do with being lefties?
No, it does not.
And Clarence DeMar was a runner?
Yes, he was.
Clarence DeMar, they were the first to break.
Nothing.
They were the last to ever.
This is not about what they did.
Is Patty a woman?
It's the one thing they didn't do.
No, it's about where they're from.
From.
Oh, and they're all from the same place except the one guy.
Exactly.
All right, what's the next question?
From this little... This little place in New Hampshire.
So where is Carlton Fisk from? He played, of course.
Was he from Vermont or New Hampshire? He was from a little place in Vermont, nearby.
Yes, he was from a little place in Vermont, wasn't he?
But he was from New Hampshire.
So these are all from Vermont.
No.
These are all not from Vermont. Everybody but one is not from Vermont.
Somebody
That's
told
not
me
what
today
it says in
Vermont.
The baseball almanac.
Oh, he was born in Vermont?
Okay. He was born in Bellows Falls, Vermont.
That's right.
Yeah. And,
Clarence DeMar was famously born in Bellows Falls.
Not Bellows Falls, South Euro, yes.
And
boy, we're taking him right down the
ground. Larry Holmes.
Seems unlikely.
So I'd guess Larry Holmes.
Larry Holmes is the odd man out.
Because he was not born in Vermont.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Boy, agonizing, wasn't it?
Yes.
Now, I want to get this straight.
Pure dole.
Carlton Fisk is not from Bellows Falls?
No.
Plastow, New Hampshire.
Charlestown.
Oh, Charlestown.
Raymond.
Oh, okay. You don't know, but he knows where. In the baseball almanac, it says he's from Bellows Falls, Vermont. So I... I see. He was born in Bellows Falls, Clarence DeMar in South Hero. Patty Sheehan is from Middlebury. And Larry Holmes, as we all know, is from Easton, Pennsylvania.
Oh, I see. That's right.
My hometown.
His hometown.
How many points do we give him for that absolutely disgraceful exhibition?
That was disgraceful.
Four. I think.
Four?
Four.
Yeah, four's kind of generous.
Carlton Fisk was famously not born here, and we still got it.
Okay, three. There you go.
Yes.
Three. You played Legion baseball? Yeah, that's good. 3 points for that, and let's trot gleefully on to round two. What
yes,
do you say?
Yes, gleefully.
Right.
Which is the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds.
Okay.
Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points up for grabs to Tony if he can identify the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he fails to. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word Porankuzuma.
Everybody knows that.
P-O-R-O-N-K-U-S-E-M-A. Porankuzuma. Gentlemen.
This morning, da da da, and I knew I had to choose between the earth below me and the wide open skies, between me being lonely and the love in your eyes. Well, it ain't rocket science. I surrendered love.
Our next live performance is in Port Townsend, Washington, Friday, June 21st. It's a community Says You to benefit the Clemente Course for the Humanities, featuring Says You team captains and local denizens vying for verbal supremacy. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. We hope you'll be there for an evening of wit and wordplay as the whole town turns out to support community education. That's Friday, June 21st in Port Townsend, Washington. A live performance of Says You. Says You returns after this from home. Okay, Father's Day coming up. What to get the old man? Something fun, quick, completely maintenance-free. Wait a minute. That sounds like Says Us, the scripts and quips of Says You. 2 volumes from our first 2 seasons, scripts from 40 shows, the ultimate way to occupy the kids on the drive to Elmira, and not a tie. You can find out more about this thoughtful gift alternative at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. And while you're there, why not contribute a question to the show? Because frankly, Phil and I are hitting a dry spell.
The stars are just like butterflies all loose up in the sky. Loving like a bottle rocket on the 4th day of July. It's just like rocket science. I surrender to love. It's just like rocket science. I surrender to love. I surrender to love.
That is the Punchy Western Boys. Please help me thank. That's Jim McHugh, Steve McBrien, Jacob Stern, and Morris Manning. Thank you very much, guys. Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. Would you please help me thank Mr. Jasper Lorien on the right and Mr. Benjamin Scherer on the left. Thank you, guys, for keeping the score. Yes, that's, you know. We have had a few moments with the word Porin Kuzuma. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
Porin Kuzuma.
Yes.
It can be found in the indigenous Laplander population. Porin Kuzuma is a metabolic condition that results in the inability to dance.
Elaine Bennis disorder.
The Elaine Bennis disorder. Whoa. An obscure reference, but a good one.
A metabolic
disorder which results in the inability to dance in Lapland. Yes. Well, it could be that. Arnie, what say you?
Oh, I think it's wonderful Inuit slang.
Yes.
it's a term of duration, or possibly duress. It's actually the distance that one single reindeer can go between relieving itself and relieving itself.
I'm sorry, between, what? One reindeer?
Yeah, it's sort of like one reindeer can, the distance that a reindeer can go before it has to take another pee. Between urinations or between...
Before...
The distance a reindeer can go before...
Yeah, like a camel, yeah. It goes a little less than a camel.
Bladder capacity.
It goes a Porin Kuzuma as opposed to two Porin Kuzumas.
I see. The distance a reindeer can go...
Before it's
before
time again.
Before he should have thought
to,
of it before he
itself.
Left the house. Yeah. Right, okay. All right, that's possible. Or it could be something else. What say you, Paula?
Porin Kuzuma, I mean, it seems to me... probably comes from Africa because this is where you usually hear of things like this, a highly contagious disease of the eye spread by rodent dung and causes a loss in the ability to see color.
Rodent dung.
An eye disease, highly contagious eye disease, which causes the victim to lose the ability to discern color. That could be it. It can be the time that a reindeer can go between stops.
Yeah.
Or it can be that metabolic condition that causes the inability to dance in Lapland.
Yeah. Walkie doggy.
Yeah. It's one of those three.
Nothing about lap dances with blind reindeer. Okie dokie. I'm not surprised. First I thought it was Indian, like one of those Indian town names. The smaller they are, the bigger they get, you know. Ramachandran, Vudunastrajan, East Mahatmaville. You know, no time to get up from the subway and get off. Metabolic condition that leads to inability to dance. Well, I could, unless it was the loss of your digestive system, I don't know. Inuit, reindeer between pee stops. I think it's the eye disease because anybody who looks that closely at rodent droppings deserves whatever he gets. What do you guys think? I think it's an Indian.
I'd go with the eye disease.
African
you're
eye
right.
Disease.
Having been to the High Arctic, there's no reason to stop for the reindeer. You know, there's nothing there, so it's not like. Pull over at the next gas station. The reindeer has to go.
And what if it's Santa? What if it's, you know, Rudolph? I mean, come to think of it, you know, how does he manage?
Who wants to even think about it?
Let's go with the eye disease.
African eye disease. Number three.
Paula, that was a pretty quick decision on their part, and it's unanimous. They think that Porin Kuzuma is the highly contagious eye disease. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Porin Kuzuma, please fake a definition.
Yeah.
10 points. Whoa.
Which
means
he did it to
all
us.
All right, audience, it's your turn. What do you think? All right. How many say the dance? How many say the reindeer stops? Pretty close. It's pretty close. I don't know who prevailed there. But somebody over there was telling the truth. Who was it?
Porin Kusuma, the distance a reindeer can travel between urinations.
And it gets him 10 points. 10 points for Carolyn's team.
I guess the only question I have is that a long way or a short way?
Don't know.
They got a lot of time to make up words up there.
You know? I guess.
What do we call this?
It must be a very notable event.
Well, the fact that it has poor in it.
The reindeer. Yeah.
3 months, 2 days, and 26. That's right. Yes.
Let's go on to round three.
Okay.
An historical round of where did we go wrong? Something was terribly flawed in the actions or logic behind the following historic events. 10 points if you can tell me what went wrong with, Carolyn, the diet of worms.
The diet of worms?
Yes. Wasn't very tasty. Yeah.
I'm going to need a little help with this team.
Well, we have some vague remembrance of this diet of worms. I can't remember. Is this the Hundred Years' War?
No. No.
Okay, the diet of worms was this.
Martin Luther.
Martin Luther. What went wrong? Luther. They started selling indulgences and lost credibility forever.
Worms is a city in Germany.
Yes.
Worms is a city,
city
in Germany.
Germany. So what went wrong what with went the wrong? Diet of worms?
Too much bratwurst.
Persecuted him.
Well, he left the church and created a whole new religion.
He tapped That's up what his went 96 wrong. Theses.
You're right. This was in Worms, Germany in 1521.
It caused a schism.
And what did they do next?
Not much, because he was able to...
They excommunicated him.
Oh, yeah.
And something else.
They took away his
his diner's club card. Yes, I know.
Right, right.
Well, you know what? You're 8 points there. Anybody else want to guess over here?
The thing that went wrong with the diet of worms was that, surprisingly, people gained weight on it.
You're closer than you know, really.
Oh, gosh.
Anybody know what went wrong with the diet of worms?
Other than the reference.
Well, then we all learn a little something.
All right.
Not only did they say he was an obstinate heretic, they banned his works.
They banned his writings.
And as a result, everybody read them.
Right. And it was the birth of public relations.
It absolutely was. They placed edicts in churches throughout Europe, and as a consequence, everyone got hip to it and started reading it.
There you go.
So that's what went wrong with the diet of worms. Try this one, Tony. What went wrong with the Intolerable Acts?
The Intolerable? That sounds like something that we did in our country.
Oh, it was what the English did to us in imposing taxes. Right?
It absolutely is.
And one of the things that they... And that
led to the American Revolution?
The tax on tea, and you had to buy stamps for paper or documents.
It actually was a little after that, but what do you think went wrong with what they did?
It backfired.
They stopped using the taxed stuff.
They did stop using the tax stuff, but it's even more than that. Paula, you're really onto it, actually.
I'm a Boston girl.
Oh, and you had to put British soldiers in your house? Is that part of it?
That was everything was part of that. Okay. But, you know, I'm going to give them 8 points also for that. It's the series of British tariffs, regulations, and maneuverings enacted as punishment for the Boston Tea Party. There were many colonists at that time. Columnists?
Just Thomas Paine, as far as I know.
There were just a few columnists.
Yeah, not to mention the Twitter people.
Yeah, really. Many colonists at that time were still on the fence as to whether or not they should support Britain or the new movement. But after the Intolerable Acts, almost no one was on the fence anymore. All right, Arnie, this is the toughest one, but see if you can get it. What went wrong with the Roosevelt Corollary?
The Roosevelt Corollary.
Not to be confused with the Roosevelt Coronary, which was a different event.
Right. The Roosevelt Corollary. All right, let's start out with which Roosevelt?
Right.
Is this Teddy?
It is, in fact.
Yes. So, all right. Did this lead to the Panama Canal? Or?
No, not specifically.
Any help, guys?
Teddy is to bear as...
Right.
Do you know what it is a corollary to? That might help.
I'm afraid I do not.
I know Barry does.
Yeah, Barry would.
Does this have anything to do with Cuba?
Barry, give him a little hand here on this.
The Roosevelt Corollary is a corollary to the Monroe Doctrine.
It is, in fact.
All right, so.
Now, I'll give you 3 points for knowing it was TR. Help him out, Barry. Do you know anything more about it?
The Monroe Doctrine was that the Brits and the French could not establish footholds in North America, and the Roosevelt Corollary extended that to South America. And is that what got us in the Spanish-American War?
No, it's after the Spanish-American War.
In 1823, the Monroe Doctrine said to Europe, not just Britain and France, but all to Europe, stay out of the Americas. North, South America, stay out of here, or we'll get mad. But it offered no enforcement strategies. In 1904, TR added his touch by saying, come here and we'll kick the living daylights out of you.
I see.
And that was the...
So was that the speak softly and carry?
Yeah, that was the start of big stick diplomacy, and it was resented by almost every government in Central and South America.
Uh-huh.
So it really started a whole a kind of resentment toward the United States, and that's what went wrong there. Oh. Try this one, Francine. What went wrong with Montcalm's column? M-O-N-T-C-A-L-M apostrophe S. Montcalm's column.
Well, we're dealing with Montcalm and Wolfe.
We are.
Don't look for more.
Is this the French?
This is the French. No, wait, this is British and French.
It is?
Yes.
Is Montcalm's column a column of soldiers marching?
It is, in fact.
And they tried to march down and take territory in what is now North America, United States.
First of all, can you tell me where this might have taken place? That will help.
Quebec.
Quebec is right. Fine. We got to Quebec finally. Yes, this is on the Plains of Abraham in Quebec. And
this is a famous song.
They knew it was Montcalm and
Wolfe. Ian and Sylvia, maybe.
give them 5 points, because you knew it was Montcalm and Wolfe. You didn't get to Quebec quite fast enough. But in the battle for Quebec, General Montcalm decided to use a column tactic rather than a wide skirmish line, because he thought he could punch a hole downward through the British who were fighting uphill. But that reduced the musket firepower, because it wasn't a wide line. It was just columns, and you couldn't shoot the guy in front of you. And in less than 20 minutes, North America was lost, and we now speak English instead of French. So that was a pretty bad mistake in tactics on the part of Montcalm. Paula, tell me what might have gone wrong with the embargo of 1807.
Embargo of 1807. The embargo of...
1807.
Little historical round.
What
I know it's
the embargo?
Yes, a little 1807.
Is this what's left of France after the Louisiana Purchase?
Well, it has to do with France, certainly.
We had no more foie gras. No.
They had no more fashion.
Yeah.
What's one of the worst things that could go wrong with an embargo?
It doesn't work.
It gets breached.
Yeah, it sure
does. It gets
doesn't.
Breached.
Except this wasn't about it being breached, but it certainly went wrong.
Because it didn't work.
This is even worse than it being breached.
They don't care.
That's exactly right.
Care.
They don't need what you're
They
embargoing.
Absolutely don't care.
Right.
This was against the British and the French, because the British and French were duking it out in Europe. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they began stopping American shipping and impressing the sailors into their militaries. Mm-hmm. Jefferson was not impressed by this. So he ordered a complete blockade of the U.S. trade with either country. Turns out, nobody wanted anything from America and couldn't care less. Not only that, America couldn't get anything that they wanted. So a year and a half later, it was quietly scrapped. And that was the embargo of 1807.
Wow.
And give them 5 points for the struggle and the effort. Very good. And finally, Barry, in this historical venue that we're going through here. And finally, Barry, what went terribly wrong with the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act of 1999?
The what again?
The Graham-Leach-Bliley Act of 1999.
The Graham-Leach-Bliley Act was authored by three Republican senators and signed by the Democratic President Bill Clinton. And it did away with the banking regulations that had been set up during the Great Depression, and it successfully kept the U.S. from going into a profound recession or Great Depression since the 1930s, and it didn't work out very well.
You are exactly right. That is exactly right. Nice job. It actually repealed Glass-Steagall.
It repealed Glass-Steagall.
And when they did that, the...
The Glass-Steagall was the one that kept banking operations separate from brokerage. Speculative investment and brokerage operations.
Yes.
Very good. It's happening again.
And it caused the 2008 economic event. Let's go on to round four. Which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to create a definition for the word fice.
Fice?
F-I-C-E. Fice. Gentlemen?
It's Saturday night, you all come right on in. We'll take out a Martin Dreadnought and a violin. Push back the furniture, roll up the rug. Crack a cold one, take a pull upon the jug. Cause tonight I pour some cornmeal on the floor. More neighbors come in knocking at your door. The guitar man, he cranks out a country tune. Set you free with dancing in the living room.
Says You says thanks to Vermont Public Radio for your help and support in Bellows Falls. To Tim Cullinan and Chip Stearns and the staff at the Bellows Falls Opera House. And to the Stowe Mountain Lodge for letting us close down the mountain this weekend and giving us a weekend of fireplaces and fun. You can see where we stayed at StoweMountainLodge.com. Don't forget to spell out mountain and put an E on Stowe.
That I can get that girl back here next Saturday.
Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. Says You. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend a live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show and achieve limited fame with a small but dedicated audience. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at SaysYou.net. SaysYou.
Yeah, you welcome by and see us now real soon. And we will set you free with dancing in the living room. And
will set you free when dancing in the living room.
That is the Crunchy Western Boys, the Blue Boys of Badgrass. Thank you very much, guys. Well, for giving us a little time with the word feist. We will go first to Tony Khan.
Well, feist is not the plural of Faust. Okay. Let's make that perfectly clear. It is, however, a very small little thing, and it is, in fact, a tiny dog that is a vicious fighter, also known as having all bite and no bark, or a pup squeak.
A small dog, but a vicious fighter.
Small dog,
short but
fighter,
wiry.
All bite, no bark.
Yeah, all right. Is a feist? Could be that, or it could be something else, Francine.
Feist is an abrasive agent used in cutting crystal.
An abrasive agent used in cutting crystal.
My first feist. Agent was abrasive.
Yeah. Is there any other kind?
No, I'm not going to go.
Don't go there. I
almost had a moment, but no.
Yeah, have that moment alone.
Yeah, an abrasive agent for cutting crystal. Could be feist, or it could be a third alternative. Barry, what's your call?
I'm surprised Arnie didn't stop you when you said this, because I know he's actually heard of this. Feist is a dish of organ meat made with the pancreas, and I know you've heard of that famous New Orleans dish, red spleens and feist.
Did you know that the singular of rice is rouse?
It is a dish of
organ meats made with the pancreas.
Oh. A dish of organ meats made with the pancreas is feist. It is either that, or an abrasive agent used for cutting crystal, or a small dog who's just a mean fighter. It's one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, falls to you.
Well, we're already discussing this. And
we're having a rip-roaring
time. We are having a rip-roaring time, because...
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm sort of leaning to that ridiculous organ meat dish just because I lived in a country for a while where they eat absolutely every piece of every animal that ever was in Argentina. So I've certainly eaten strange things there, although I think I missed this one, Barry. But I wonder if that could be feist.
Would you really serve a pancreas?
I've never seen a pancreas. I've seen many other parts.
Well, you never know.
I've never seen them.
Maybe they just didn't tell you.
For example, the thymus gland, I've had that.
Sweetbreads
and dentrifuge.
There's that Ogden Nash poem about,
anyway.
I've never seen my pancreas and never hope to see it.
Yeah, right.
True.
Never
so
hope to eat
what
it.
Are you guys thinking?
Well, the tiny dog, I'm thinking that's like Fido, and the abrasive agent is like a file.
Doesn't
so
make pancreas look good?
I just don't think people eat pancreas.
Well, let's talk about who knows. Is there a doctor in the house? The function of the pancreas is?
I mean, to just collect.
Are we actually going to the function of the pancreas?
Well, I mean, if it collects toxins, you don't eat it probably. Right. But if it doesn't.
It does collect toxins, doesn't it?
I have no idea what it does, and I don't
want
to.
But you
see
yourself
it.
Just said.
Well, it secretes insulin.
In Argentina, they eat everything. It secretes insulin. Yeah.
Well, I'd take a chance on it.
You'd take a chance on it. You have
would.
A gut
yeah.
feeling.
You
okay.
have a side order of. Yeah, whatever.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
Well, we will go with Paula's gut, although.
And a side order of pancreas.
Pan fried pancreas. Pancreas parmesan.
Hey, we had reindeer leak. I mean, you know.
We did. Well, all right then. Let's go with that.
Barry may have come to the conclusion that feist is a dish of organ meats, specifically the pancreas. Is that in fact what it is?
Paula is so smart and so sweet, it makes me so sorry she's so wrong.
See?
10 points. Right. That is okay, not then. It. Okay, audience, 50-50 shot. What do you think?
Dog.
Well, I hear barking. I hear everything out there. How many think it's the small, vicious dog? How many of you think it's the abrasive to cut crystal? Not even close. Not even close, Francine. This audience knows that Feist is an abrasive used to cut crystal. Is that in fact what it is?
Please bluff.
There it is.
It is a bluff.
Because
the definition actually reads,
speaking on behalf of fellow Feist everywhere.
Well done.
It's, yes, for those who still haven't quite got it, it's a small dog noted for its pugnacity.
There
pug-nacity.
You go. Feist, really? 10 points.
Wow.
For Tony's case.
As we prepare to head west to Seattle to close this season of live performances, we want to take a moment and thank all the folks in Stowe and Bellows Falls, Vermont, Nashville, Tennessee, West Hartford, Connecticut, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Syracuse, New York, and of course all our friends in our hometown of Boston for packing the house coast to coast, laughing and playing along. Our schedule of performances for next season, including stops from New England to California, will be posted shortly on the website at saysyou.net, which, as we all remember, is S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. And thanks to all the folks who have survived the public humiliation of sending a question to Says You. What about you? Got the nerve?
Let's close tonight with a round of Says Who. Using the clues provided, please tell me who uttered the following phrasing. Carolyn, when asked to compare their bodies of work, this show business legend cooed, "Let Shakespeare do it his way, I'll do it mine. We'll see who comes out best."
Shouldn't it be, "We'll see who comes out better"?
Yes, but that's not what it was.
All
this
right.
Is a showbiz legend?
Oh, yeah. "Let Shakespeare do it his way, I'll do it mine. We'll see who comes out better."
When you say cooed, I think woman, but this is probably a man, right?
How many men coo?
How many
Neil
men
Neil Simon?
Well, no.
No.
Would this be...
It's a cooing.
I've been thinking Marilyn Monroe.
It is not Marilyn Monroe. It's
Betty
a great
Davis.
Guess.
Wait a minute. The body
you're using,
of work.
You're using the clues well. That's
body
a great
of
guess.
Work.
So
body.
It's a writer.
Body. Mae West.
Mae West is
Mae...
exactly right.
Mae West.
Eight points. Nice
great.
Job.
Good.
Nice job. 8 points for the second
and
guess.
Do you know what W.C. Fields said of Mae West?
No, what?
It's a plumber's dream of Cleopatra.
That's actually true. Okay.
She makes
you,
me flush.
Kids, kids, your parents will explain that on the way home.
Yeah.
And thanks for that. Try this one, Tony. This homespun literary legend's gave this advice to aspiring writers. As to the adjective, when in doubt, strike it out.
He didn't like adjectives, my
didn't
God.
Like...
He didn't, and I'm sure he didn't like adverbs. What does that mean?
Yeah.
For the nouns.
Yeah.
If you ask for an adjective, strike it out.
This homespun literary legend homespun. Gave this advice to...
Well, homespun, so it's Mark well, Twain. Well,
it is, in fact.
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain, very good.
Homespun.
10 points. All right, Arnie. His poetic description of authors, the great ones are thought mad, the small ones fools.
Say that whole thing again.
His poetic description of authors, the great ones are thought mad, the small ones fools.
The great ones.
Oh, he's...
Is it Pope?
It is Alexander Pope.
Right.
Very nice. Very nice.
All right, Arnie.
Just can't get one by you.
I just had to scan it, sorry.
He scanned it and he found it. Yeah. Try this one, Francine. His description of the office he shared with Dorothy Parker, one square foot less and it would be adulterous.
George S. Kaufman?
No.
Nope.
S.J. Perlman?
Nope. No, actually. The office he shared with Dorothy Parker, one square foot less and it would be adulterous.
Who else?
No, I don't know if they're going to get this.
Nope.
Mencken?
Nope.
No?
Mencken?
Does the other side know?
Yep.
Yep, okay.
Ogden Nash.
No, I think they got every single one.
Thurber.
They got every single one, but
Robert Benchley.
Robert Benchley. you went all the way around the round table. You got everybody but Robert Benchley. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, so sorry.
And try this one, Paula. It's hard to imagine anyone else saying, I can answer you in two words. Impossible.
Oh,
wait a minute now. I'm Betty Davis. What was that?
It's hard to
imagine. You have to tell me now.
Samuel Goldwyn.
Oh,
sakes,
hard to imagine anyone else saying that.
Right. Impossible. Samuel.
It's hard to imagine anyone else saying, I can answer you in two words, impossible. And finally, Barry, entertainment's premier curmudgeon offered this advice. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Then quit. No use being a damn fool about it.
Premier curmudgeon.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be. I ain't got no respect.
No. It actually isn't. No.
If at first you don't succeed. Oh,
yes. Try again, then
curmudgeon.
Quit.
Then I don't think it's Fields.
It's Fred Allen.
It's Fields?
It is W.C. Fields. Of course it is.
Okay. 10
points.
Fred Allen.
Went back to him.
Nice job. Nice close. And a good day for you guys, but not enough. Not on a day when Carolyn's team was going to score 84 points.
That?
Winners this week. Congratulations.
When did we win? At what point was the victory? Certainly not.
That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to the good folks of Bellows Falls and Rockingham, and especially to Chip Stearns and all those here at the Bellows Falls Opera House. Major thanks to Sarah Laurie and Michael Broderick at the Stowe Mountain Lodge for the fabulous weekend experience. And thanks to Ty Robertson, Robin Turnow, and everybody at Vermont Public Radio. Sure and Salkind write the words. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is the AP with the get up and go. Once every few weeks, we remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, Bellows Falls, for showing up. See you next week.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.